Good afternoon. So, last time we finished up talking about monitors. We mentioned that we had this concept of a monitor, we had this lock protecting all our shared data, and we had condition variables, which really, were just list of waiting threads. And we had one condition variable for each thing they would wait for. So that was the condition, is that each condition variable was associated with one thing threads would be waiting for, but it was just a list of waiting threads. We had this pattern that we ran this while loop. While threads needed to wait, they would call this condition variable wait function to add themselves to the waiting list. And when threads change that reason, for example, if we added to a queue that threads were waiting for items to be on, we would broadcast or signal the condition variable to remove a thread from the list. We also talked about counting semaphores, which we learned were, well, they're as powerful as monitors, but have a rather different sort of design. You can kind of think of them as like a generalization of locks, where rather than having one thing we're controlling access to, it's an arbitrary number. And the way they worked, they kept this counter. We had this up operation, which incremented the counter, and this down operation, which decremented the counter, but with the catch that we wouldn't let the counter go negative. So rather than letting it go negative, we just wait for it to be high enough so we could decrement it down to zero. And we learned that sort of the pattern we used for using this is we like thought of, okay, what thing should I count that's going to be zero when I want to wait? And we just do the bookkeeping for that. We had post or up operations where that count would increase. We had wait or down operations where that count would decrease, and this would end up doing all the waiting and such we wanted to do. So questions on these things we covered last time? Yes? Sure, let's talk about quiz. I made a big mistake on question 1C because I was editing things at the last minute and some words got removed and it ended up not making much sense. However, I think on 1C, and I'll talk about the other options for 1, a lot of students who got it wrong for reasons other than not understanding the very bad wording, so talk about that first. So let's look at what question 1 was about. The mutex implementation we talked about in lecture, the one where we use spin locks to control access to this small amount of data, which was going to be this lock taken flag and a list of waiting threads. And so I'll start with 1C, since that's the most confusing. What it was meant to say is that if we move the lock taken into false to here, so it just always happens outside of the if-else statement in unlock mutex. And then we add lock taken equals true here. Now, would that cause problems, is essentially. In particular, would it cause the problem that we could have two threads effectively lock the mutex at once? Which we describe as we have two returning from lock mutex without an intervening unlock, meaning that must mean that two threads think they have the mutex locked at the same time, even though that's not what we're supposed to allow. And I didn't say two threads have the mutex locked at the same time because we have to define what does it mean to have the mutex locked. So that's why I say we have two returns from lock mutex without an intervening unlock. So that why would that be possible? And the situation which makes that possible is that I move this here instead of here, but it's basically that down here we'd have is that right after here, lock mutex can happen right after the unlock in any thread. So a thread other than the one we made runnable. So in, say thread B, but we could have marked thread A runnable? And what that would mean is that what could happen is that we have thread B, since lock taken equals true, and then thread A does the same thing. And thread B would do it because of the code down here, and thread A would do it because of the code we added after the run scheduler. So both of them would think they have the lock when they didn't. So that's on option C. So questions about that scenario? So one of the things we relied on in the original lock design, which this option would have changed, is that when we handed off the lock to another thread, any thread that came in the meanwhile would add itself to the queue rather than assuming the lock. You could take the lock. And this change would have broken it. Let's talk about the options that were not confusingly worded. So another question we had is that we said the mutex runs the scheduler, which it does. And we're saying if several threads are waiting to lock a mutex, which one gets it first will depend on the scheduling algorithm and policy. So this is true if we're thinking about if several threads are waiting to get this spin lock, right? So the spin lock, it depends who runs first. They're going to be the one who has the opportunity to set the spin lock to taken and therefore get the spin lock. But typically, when threads are waiting on this lock, the reason they're going to be waiting is that they'll have gone to this code here, that the thread that has the lock isn't actually in the middle of lock mutex, but is in the code between its lock and unlock. And that means we can go to this code here and add ourselves to the wait queue. And then the question is, when do we get to run? Well, we get to run when we're runnable and the scheduler chooses to run us, but we only become runnable when the unlock does that. And the unlock's going to do that based on the wait queue. And because of that, that means that as long as the threads get to the point where they add themselves to the wait queue, the order depends on how that queue is ordered, which we have no guarantee is what the scheduler does. Might be a good idea to make it do what the scheduler would do, but that's not sort of implied by this implementation. So questions on that or either of the two options I went over? Go over B next. So question, they get marked runnable in the order they choose in the queue, but the scheduler might choose them in different orders. So we only mark one thread as runnable, and any other threads that are waiting for the lock will not be marked as runnable until that thread that we first marked as runnable gets the lock and returns from its lock mutex. So there's not going to be a scenario where we've marked multiple threads as runnable and they're all still competing to get the lock. Yes? When I run the scheduler, is it guaranteed that the thread that's just marked as runnable will be chosen? Absolutely not. But since that's the only thread that's that can get the mutex, it's the next one to get it. So if any other thread is trying to lock the mutex, there's two possibilities. So one possibility is it's already called lock mutex. In that case, it's on the waiting list and it's not runnable. The other possibility is it still needs to call lock mutex. In that case, it's going to call lock mutex and... Where is my mouse? Here we are. Lock mutex, and it's going to go to this code here, and it's not going to be runnable. Does that answer your question? Yes. Question, if there's some thread that doesn't need to lock mutex, could that be chosen? Absolutely. And that would be what would have to happen if the one that wants to lock the mutex isn't chosen next. But sort of the most natural thread, which doesn't need to lock a mutex that could be chosen, is whatever the thread that unlocked it is doing afterwards. Right? That could just keep running. Other questions? Okay, so on A and B, so then we'll have, talk about B. So B, saying that let's add lock taken equals true after the run scheduler here. And that would do nothing. And the reason why it would do nothing is that we know that when we mark a thread as runnable, lock taken is already true. We know it's already true because we're in unlock. So in the normal operation, and we marked as runnable, and we know that any other thread that comes along in the meanwhile is going to see lock taken still being true and not going to change that. So adding a lock taken equals true here wouldn't do anything. Lock taken's already going to be true because the unlock left it as true. And we know the lock taken is true because, you know, it was true the first time the mutex was acquired, and it was never reset unless we unlocked the mutex and never woke anyone up. But if that happened, then we can't be in this code here where we, you know, this is after something's added to the waitlist. So questions on that scenario? Yes.
So why specifically wouldn't it hang?
What?
Why specifically would it not hang?
Why would it not hang? So it, because we aren't changing anything, we're just setting something that's true to all be true again. Like, so it's not going to change any part of the behavior. Other questions? Other questions about the quiz? Yes?
So I have like the same question on the first choice. So you mentioned like even though when we mark the two threads as runnable, they're going to be executed in order.
So the question is about when we mark two threads as runnable. So that does not happen in this mutex design. If threads are waiting, we only mark one as runnable at a time. We mark a runnable as?
Yeah, so like when we have two calls to unlock mutex, we're gonna like dequeue from the queue like twice.
So question is, we have two unlocks, we're gonna dequeue from the queue twice? Yes. But the way we use locks is that we only unlock if we have a corresponding lock. If you don't do that, then indeed this mutex is not gonna behave like we want, but that's pretty much true of any lock. And I tried to phrase the question options carefully to avoid that, and that's one of the reasons why the phrasing was, even when there wasn't grammatical issues, was more awkward than maybe it seemed like it needed to be. Yes? Can I go over the semaphore one? Okay, so on this question, I made a minor mistake that made the answer a little harder than I wanted it to be, which is that there should be a clear of current pair. Because the idea of this make pair method is that we call make pair, we get a pair, and then we reset to have the next set of pairs. And so the best solution was that after we get a pair together, which is what ends up happening here, and we'll talk about why in a bit, where you want to clear and set up for the next pair. And that's what needs to go in the blank. So what happens in the code up here? So up here, we have this mutex, and we add to this current pair vector, which we want to have two things. And before we do that, we wait on this make pair mutex. So the idea of this make pair mutex is that it's going to force us to have only two at a time. So we have a pair. And that tells you about what should the initial value be down here. That the idea of the make pair, sorry, semaphore, I should say, is that it's going to make us go two at a time. So we're going to set it to two, so initially two can go, and then we stop. Then we have this mutex where we add to the current pair list, and if we're the second one to go, in that case, we know we have our results, and we also signal to the other part of our pair with post that it can go. So this is that gate pattern I talked about, that we're kind of lifting up the gate so it can go through. And if we don't have a full pair, we do the opposite of that. We wait for the gate to be lifted by the other side. That's waiting for a finished pair. And then we extract the current pair. And we know we're second, so we should be the ones to allow set up for the next pair to go through. And that's what's intended to go in blank one. And sort of the best way of doing that would be to clear the current pair and then post twice to set up so two items can go through that first wait. And yeah, I meant to not omit the current pair as part of the blank, but it means there was a correct answer that that a few people got, but not very many, and a accepted answer, which I intended to be the correct answer because I intended to include the current pair to Claire. So questions on the logic for that? Yes. Why is the if condition checking that the size is 1? So it's the if condition is checking the size is 2. If the size is not 2, then assuming we clear, it should be 1. If we don't clear, it might be 3, 4, 5. But if we clear properly, it's going to be 1. Because that's the only other possible. Now, it's not going to be 1 after we wait. It's going to be 2 after we wait. Questions on that? Yes?
If you put nothing, will the program just halt?
So question, if I put nothing there, then the first two calls to make pair will return, and the other ones will hang in there forever. And I guess I didn't see from comments that people understood that that was going on. But if that was your intention, I might have given credit. Other questions? Okay. And other questions on semaphores, monitors in general? About our next topic. Yes? What's the difference between a mutex and a monitor? So a monitor is a mutex plus condition variables, plus some shared data. So a mutex is just part of a monitor. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yeah?
So the reason we did 2 posts is because we wanted a pair, so we wanted to
get the question, the reason we did 2 posts is because we wanted a pair? Yes, we wanted to allow 2 calls to proceed.
So
and each post allows 1 wait to finish.
So if the size is already 1, why wouldn't you just need 1 wait?
Sorry?
So if the condition, so that else just basically mean that it's empty?
Question, did that else just mean that it's empty? The else condition in here is that it was not finished yet. Not, we didn't finish making a pair yet. That's the intention, and that, assuming we cleared properly, meant that it had exactly 1 thing. It wasn't it. Other questions? Yeah?
Can I go over number 3
on the quiz? Okay, so number 3 on the quiz was asking about it's a scenario with mutexes and condition variables, asking what do we put in blank 2 and blank 4. So this is pairing up students and TAs. We have basically a queue of waiting students. And we want to, after we have identified for blank 2, we've identified what TA is helping a student, and we want to do something about that. Presumably, the thing we're doing is going to wake up the TA, who needs to be waiting until that is set in this loop here. So we want these to be a wait on some condition variable and a signal or broadcast to that condition variable. Because that's what's going to make sense. We want to wake up the thread that's waiting in blank 4 with whatever code is in blank 2. So we're going to expect a broadcast or signal in blank 2 and a wait in blank 4. So if we look at our options for question 3, we have a bunch, actually, which work in this sort of way. And the question is, which can we use here? And the question is, well, what CV do we use? And using the student CV makes the most sense, is my argument here. And the reason why is, well, let's look at our other options. So one option you might have is, like, as you might say, is let's use the TA CV. So that's one of the options. Here is we can use the TA CV. We can't do that because that is null. That's a null pointer to reference. So we can't do that because we don't know what the TA is here. We haven't set that. We haven't. Actually, I forgot to do student help by equals TA, TA equals student help by, so that's a bigger problem. Student help by, yeah. We can't wait on a student help by CV because that is a null pointer. So that's a null pointer to reference, so we can't do that in the con wait. And we can't use global CV because global CV is being used for blank 1, which we can tell because of this con signal. And that con signal is not going to work properly if we're sharing the CV for two different things, because it's going to choose one thread to wake up, and it might be a thread that's a student rather than TA or vice versa. So we can't use global CV, which means we must use the other option, which is the student CV. That answer the question? Other questions on? Okay, so let's talk about our next topic. So I'm gonna talk about something we call the reader-writer problem. So this is another common pattern. So we talk about producer-consumer as a common pattern. Another common pattern is what's called the reader-writer problem, that we have some shared data, and we have this rule, which should remind you of the rule we talked about for things in the C++ standard library, like vectors, that we can have one thread modifying at a time, but read-only access from lots of threads is fine. And we could use a lock to satisfy these constraints, but this seems a little annoying because if we are mostly doing reads, then the lock is forcing our readers to take turns, even though that's not really necessary. So what instead we might have is what's called a reader-writer lock. And this is a lock that distinguishes between readers and writers. So we'll have a read lock and a write lock. And a read lock is gonna wait until there's no writers, but we're gonna allow multiple read locks to happen at once. So the read locks will not be exclusive. We can have as many read locks as we want, but write locks are exclusive. You can only get a write lock if there's no one else trying to read or write. So write locks mean they're something that really only one thread can have at a time, but as many threads can have a read lock. And if any thread has a read lock, no thread can have a write lock. So we have this read lock, read unlock, write lock, write unlock operations. This is a common pattern, and it's pretty useful. And in fact, it's useful enough that it's in the POSIX library. POSIX has RW locks, which are these reader-writer locks. So you have this read lock operation and this write lock operation. So the read lock operation As I mentioned, you can have multiple readers at the same time. The write lock operation, we can only have one writer. You know, and not just one writer at a time, but one writer and no other readers at the when we're writing. So just to review what reader-writer locks are, let's say we're running all these different functions at once. What are possible outputs? Question? What? What is what? What is put s? Put s output something, sorry. Sorry? The question if a thread is reading. Sorry, is it what? Question, can a thread still output with a read lock? So like our normal locks, right? These locks only actually prevent simultaneous reading and writing if we use them in a consistent way, right? Like, the rules about what locks do are just that, you know, some threads are going to wait on the read lock or write lock operation until an unlock happens. So they don't prevent you from writing, they just are things you'll use to not have data races happen. Who would like some more time? Okay, so who thinks one is a possible output? Okay, two. Okay, three. Okay, four. Okay, five. Okay, good, so we seem to have a proper understanding that we can't have this result where, I should put red, where we have our two write locks acquired at the same time. That's what that's telling us. That's not allowed. We can't have this output here where we have a read lock acquired in the middle of a write lock. That's not allowed. And we also don't have an example of it here, but also couldn't have a write lock acquired in the middle of a read lock. Yes? Question, after we acquire the read lock, what's going to happen? So acquiring the read lock is going to wait until no one's writing. And until we've unlocked the read lock, no one can acquire a write lock. And by no one writing, I mean no one has a write lock. Not literally whether they're writing or not, but presumably if they have a write lock, we assume they're writing. Yes.
What were the correct answers again?
So possible outcomes include one, that's fine. We have, and three is fine. And four and five are not fine. So, and nor is two. So four is another example of two read locks, two write locks at once. Yes? Quick question, why does number five not work? So number five is saying that in the middle of thread C running, we have thread A happen between here. And that means that while thread C has a write lock, someone can get a read lock, and that's not allowed. Yes? Question, after thread C acquires the write lock, other threads can't run. Other threads can't acquire any locks until thread C is done with the lock. Other questions? Yes. So the question is, how should I think about the question? So the way I would think, so one way of thinking about it is to go to these rules I showed you, which is look at, we're gonna wait until there's no writers, or wait until there's no readers and writers, where we get registered as a writer by getting a write lock, registered as a reader by getting a read lock, and just say, well, based on this, are we doing locks that violate that? And we see here, we'd say, oh, wait, this D means we've just write locked, but thread C is registered as a writer. So that's a problem. Because it should be waiting instead for there to be no writers. And we can say similarly in five, we look at this A here and we say, oh, that means that thread A just read locked, but we know thread C is in the middle of here, so it must have registered as a writer. That shouldn't be possible. It's supposed to wait until there's no writers. Yes? Question, if I read lock, can another thread read? Absolutely. So we can have two readers at once, that's fine. Or even, sorry? But we can't have a writer come in until the readers are all done. Yes? So question in three, does this mean that B, thread B, is acquiring the read lock after thread A has it? Yes, and that is fine. If we look at our rules about when the locks wait, a read lock is waiting until there's no one registered as a writer. Thread B looks at who's registered as readers and writers and says, oh, there's a registered reader, but I don't care, I'm getting a read lock. Yes? What does wait until no writers mean? It means wait until no threads have acquired a write lock and not unlocked it. So, and by acquiring a write lock, I mean running this write lock operation and not having yet run the unlock operation for it. Yes? Question, I wait until the write lock has been unlocked? Yes, that's what I, but by having readers or writers, I mean someone has a read lock or has a write lock. That's what our definition of reader or writer is. We aren't going to actually check if they're really reading or writing. Yes?
So is it different for read lock? I thought like in the past with like music lock, you couldn't acquire the lock twice until like you unlocked the lock.
So the question, is this different than the normal music? Absolutely. Yes. And notably, the POSIX implementation like seems to be doing some tracking of like what type of lock you acquired earlier for the unlock operation to work. So this is different, that two different threads can acquire the lock at the same time, yes. So this is a very different type of lock. That if two different threads can acquire at the same time if they're both read locks. Yes. Other questions? Yeah.
So two can both acquire the same lock if they're both write locks, but not if they're read locks?
Question, two can acquire at the same time if they're both read locks? Yes, but not if they're both write locks. Write locks still work much like our normal mutexes. So let's think about how we can implement these. This is a good example of what monitors would look like. So let's do this here. So we want to do this with monitors. Well, if we have a monitor, we have a lock. We have some shared data, which is going to be our readers and writers. Remember, our conditions were wait until there's no readers, wait until there's no writers. I'm going to define a thread as a reader or a writer if it's acquired a read lock without unlocking for the readers, or acquired a write lock without unlocking for the writers. And I have my condition variables for a list of waiting threads. What threads can I have waiting? Threads waiting to acquire a read lock, and threads waiting to acquire a write lock. So I'll have a condition variable to list threads for each of those possibilities. And here's my code. So my read lock, I acquire this sort of internal lock, and I wait until there's no writers. And while there are writers, I wait on the OK to read condition variable, which is going to be broadcast when someone finishes writing, meaning they unlock on the write side. On the read unlock side and the write unlock side, I also have to deal with people wanting to write. So if someone wants to write, they're going to wait until there's no readers or writers. And I'm going to signal that there might be no readers or writers after I read or write unlock. And part of to make this work, I need to track the number of readers or writers, so I just do some bookkeeping. So I have this bookkeeping where I'm keeping track of how many readers or writers there are based on who's gotten far enough to acquire a read or write lock. So that, along with signaling when I know those numbers have changed such that someone might be able to stop waiting, that's sort of how I implement this with monitors. Questions about the simple implementation here? Yeah?
So how are read and write locks different than just mutexes?
How are they different than just mutexes? So we saw an example here where, oh, we can have two threads acquire the read version of the lock at the same time. That's the main difference. And if you have lots of threads reading, that's very useful because it's going to allow you to do a lot more at once. Where a normal lock, you know, it would still avoid race conditions, but it would make things a lot less efficient if you're doing a lot of reading that otherwise, you know, couldn't happen in parallel. Yes?
The reason true is false because
question is, the reason two is not possible is because C and D are requiring the write lock at the same time? Yes. So the write lock part of it still works like our normal mutexes. Other questions here? Okay, so you can see in this implementation, I've done some little things for efficiency, like I don't signal a writer unless there's no readers. I don't bother signaling when there's one reader, and I signal instead of broadcast because I know only one writer can go at a time anyways. But there's something kind of inefficient I'm doing, which is that I just wake up readers and writers and let them fight, basically. And just let them both run and have the scheduler figure out what happens, which maybe isn't ideal. Okay, question though? Question is, if there's multiple threads trying to write, I'm only going to let one go at a time? Yes, because I'm going to signal one at a time. And it might be the case that someone enters this write lock while I'm waking up a thread. So there could be some cases where I wake up a thread and then it can't actually go, like we saw with the example with the producer-consumer earlier, where that loop could happen multiple times even without spurious wake-ups. But for the most part, yeah, I'm just waking up one thread at a time and it gets to go.
Broadcast, I mean, that would be fine for broadcast, right?
So if I put a broadcast there, it would work. It would be just less efficient because I'd be waking up a bunch of threads that I know would not be able to make progress. They just go into this loop and they'd realize, oh, writers is greater than zero, so this is not true. So this is true still, so I need to keep waiting. Yes? What? So, why don't we use broadcast per write?
Yeah.
I know that only one thread can write at a time. So it's safe to use signal for that. For read, if I have 10 threads waiting to read, they all can go at once. So I better use broadcast so they all get to go. I don't leave any waiting that could actually go. Okay, so one thing that's not so right here is that if there's both readers and writers, I just wake them both up. And that's kind of not ideal because, you know, one of these is not great. You know, either I'm waking up a bunch of readers, which can't go, or I'm waking up a bunch of writers, or waking up, oh, sorry, a writer that's gonna immediately find there's still readers now. Can't go. So, a question we have is that there's actually a policy question here, which is that who do I want to go first? That if there's readers and writers, and it's both their turn, do I want to have the writers go first or the readers go first? And the implementation I have here is kind of just whatever just happens at random. But we can make an explicit decision, and this is sort of a nice thing about, you know, code with sort of condition variables and monitors. So the question is, how can I make a decision between these? How can I decide to let writers go if they're writers and let readers go otherwise, for example, if I want to have, you know, this writers first policy? Well, I need to know when it's the case that there's a writer waiting to go. So I need to track the number of waiting readers and writers. And this idea of tracking threads that are waiting for something, this comes up a lot when we want to make interesting decisions about ordering threads. Just track who's waiting in some way. So in this case, I can track how many are waiting. So let's look at what that looks like. So here I'm going to implement writers first. And why would I want to do writers first? Well, if I don't try to give priority to writers, if I have lots of reading happening, kind of the writers might just get starved. They never get to go, because there's always at least one reader. So we want to actually implement code to say, you know, stop readers. So what I'll do is I'll track how many writers are waiting. How am I going to track that? Well, before they start waiting, they'll increment a count. After they're done waiting, they'll decrement a count. So now I'm tracking the number of writers that are waiting. And I'm going to have a policy that if there's writers waiting, we don't start new readers. So we can give them a chance to go. And when I unlock for writers, I check if there's a waiting writer, I signal them if so, otherwise I let readers go. I don't do both. Questions? So this is a very common pattern where I say, oh, I want to make a smarter decision, so I'll just track something that I wasn't tracking before and just adjust my conditions to depend on that thing. In this case, it's, are there writers waiting? Questions? Okay. So the way that this might work, so let's say we have two readers, a writer and a reader. We have our count of how many writers there are, how many readers there are, and how many waiting writers there are, which are initially zero. If a thread wants to read lock, it's going to say, okay, well, there's no writers, readers, or waiting writers, so we can just go. So it adds one to the number of readers. Thread two, you know, that's doing reader, the second reader, same way. Then when a writer comes along, it's going to say, oh, there's readers. but it's registered itself as a waiting writer. So a waiting writer is one. And this means later on when another reader comes along, we're going to say, sorry, you can't go now. It's going to look and say, I have to wait, even though there's only readers right now, because there's a waiting writer. And we've decided we're giving priority to that waiting writer so they don't get starved. So eventually, we'll unlock all the readers will finish and unlock, and they'll signal the writer. The writer will say, oh, now there's no readers. Now there's a writer. And the reader, well, that's waiting, still won't be able to go because it has to wait till there's no readers or writers. So it's still waiting until we actually unlock. And in that case, we'll say, oh, there's no waiting writers. Now I can let the readers go that were waiting ahead of me. Or behind me, sorry. This is sort of what the typical operation looks like. So we end up sort of queuing up the readers behind whenever a writer comes along. This is one decision we could make in designing our reader-writer lock. So questions on that? Yeah?
You would apply the lock before you read, and then what if you, like, something changed after you release the text after?
So the question is, if I acquire the lock, why am I not worried about something changing if I'm just acquiring a read lock?
Yeah.
My assumption is that everyone who modifies the data uses a write lock, and they can't get a write lock until I'm done reading. Meaning I unlock the read lock. If we don't actually follow that policy, we're going to have problems. Okay. So here I made the decision to prioritize writers, meaning that the reader had to wait for the writer. I could have made the opposite decision. I could instead track how many waiting readers there are and say writers don't go until there's no waiting readers. Yes, I could have made a different policy decision, and I could make all sorts of policy decisions in between just by tracking sort of extra information. And as for what do the POSIX reader-writer locks do, well, POSIX doesn't specify, so it's up to each individual OS what they implement. So as a little exercise before our next topic, let's say I want something in between. Let's say I want reader priority, except if the writers wait more than 1 second. So I want to usually prefer readers. I don't want that thing where we just stop all the reading whenever a writer comes along, but I don't want the writers to wait more than a second. So what would I change in here to do that? Give you a minute to look at it and then take suggestions of places where I'll need to edit something in this code. Question? I'll start taking suggestions. So who has things that should be changed? Yeah.
So in the write lock, before we get into the while loop, you can start a wait timer.
Okay, so you want to start a timer, and what would that timer do? So we want to record the time here. Okay.
And we're going to end the recording time after we finish the while loop. We'll just get a read on
And reset recorded time, okay? Reset recorded time, okay?
Inside of the write off loss method, we can include or in the first instance. So when.
Okay, so we want to do this or something about the time?
I'm not talking about the while loop here, but the one below in the write unlock method.
Okay, in the write unlock method.
The first test case?
This should be, okay, this should be or.
Or with the wait time is greater than
okay.
1 second.
So or writer waiting too long. Okay. So we need to record how long writers are waiting, and we want to make some conditions based on how writers waiting too long, one is in the write unlock. Yes? Question is, if the writer, if we have two writers that waited more than 1 second, we run the first one, do we then run the second one? And I would say yes, because that second one has waited much more than 1 second now. Yeah. Other questions or suggestions? So we have this idea that I want to add if waiting readers is zero or a writer's waited too long. And I guess this should be actually waited too long. So I wrote that condition actually slightly, there's something slightly wrong with that condition. So what's wrong with it? Yeah.
Write lock method.
Actually, sorry, there isn't something wrong with that. Right, I was thinking incorrectly. But that's not sufficient. So in the write lock method, it could still be waiting, yeah. Okay, so in the write lock method, we're going to be waiting if there's waiting readers based on how this code is written. So we need to have or, so we need to have if there's no waiting readers and or waiting too long. Right. Writers waiting too long. We need to have that sort of extra option for that. It's going to adjust that condition a bunch. Right, because right now we're saying if there's no waiting readers and writers aren't waiting too long, that's not really what we want. Okay. Other things we need to change? So there's one other place we need to change things, and that is here. So we want waiting readers or writer waiting too long. Writers waiting too long. Right. We need to be consistent that if we're changing the we have to make sure that every time we're signaling or broadcasting the OK to write CV that we use the same condition. And our condition is now, it's okay to write if no waiting readers or writers waiting too long and no readers or writers. Right, we need all, that needs to be reflected everywhere we use OK to write. Questions on that? Yes.
When you say or later wait too long, it would be any other waiting writers waiting too long. So if you signal any writer,
so the question is, if I signal any writer, it's not necessarily the longest waiting one that gets signaled? Yes. So another thing we might want to change is this won't prioritize might not be longest waiting. So if we care about signaling the longest waiting writer, we need to do even more work to adjust this. Probably something similar to that queue we did with the producer consumer example, where we had like a queue of waiters. Yes? So this question is recorded time global across all of the writers. So if we probably would actually need to track it like separately for each writer in some way. Yes, so that is an extra complication. This is why I'm giving pseudocode, not full code. Because the actual full code, you see all these sort of things which make it a little complicated. So the main purpose is, so the big thing I want you to get out of this is, if we want to change that condition, we need to make sure we're consistent. We change it everywhere. We also need to do all the bookkeeping around it. Yes?
So we don't need to alter anything in readlock?
Question, we don't need to alter anything in readlock? That's a good question. So do we need to alter anything in readlock? And the answer is going to be yes. We want to wait while there's no writers and no writers have waited too long. Because we want to give priority to writers which have waited too long over readers. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
If you start a timer before the while loop and you check the time, then how are you updating the timer?
Question, if we start a timer before the while loop and check the time, how are we updating the timer? We can compare a recorded timestamp with the current time.
But isn't the conditional wait to stay there and you wouldn't go to the second while loop except even after?
Presumably, we record a timestamp here and all our checks for have waited too long, we look at the current time versus that timestamp. Having to check the timer again, it will check the timer when it's waken up from the con wait. And other threads, like that are unlocking or read locking or read unlocking, can check the timer themselves.
It's not necessarily exactly after 1 second that it's responding.
Question is not after 1 second. So what we're saying is after 1 second, we change our policy from preferring readers to preferring not readers. Okay, so let's talk about a different topic about threads. It's going to be something called deadlock. And to give an example, let's say we're using a locking-based strategy to manage some cars on a road. So what our cars are going to do to make sure we don't have any conflicts, like collisions, is we're going to, before we move into a space of road, we're going to reserve it. So we're just going to reserve our space of road ahead of us. We're going to have some way of communicating that, hey, this yellow car has that yellow space in front of it. This black car has that black space in front of it. And we know we're going to prevent conflicts and collisions, right? So we just move into that space and we're all set. And now we have a problem. And we have to figure out some way of resolving this issue. And if we follow our policy of let's reserve spaces of roads, well, we can't, right? We can't say, I'm going to reserve this space in front of me now because it's being used by the black car. And the black car can't reserve the space in front of it because it's being used by the yellow car. And we're going to have to do something other than our original plan to resolve this problem. And this scenario is called deadlock. That kind of we've gotten into a situation where we're both waiting on each other. And if we just keep going ahead with that idea that I want to go to the forward on this road, and I want to go forward on this road, there's no way we can ever make progress. Someone needs to do something else. And this is a contrived example, but this sort of scenario where we have one car waiting on another car, we're just waiting on the first car, we have that sort of happen with threads, sort of naturally, in a whole bunch of ways. And we in fact saw an example of this rather early in the semester with pipes. So here's something that hangs with pipes. So I create two pipes, one meant to go from a parent to a child, one meant to go from a child to a parent. And I say, okay, so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna have the child write a bunch of data to the parent and read a bunch of data from the parent, and the parent's gonna do the same thing. And that seems like that should work fine. But this will hang if the size is big enough. And someone remember, what's going to make it hang? What's going to be happening when the, why is it, what's going to be happening to the child and parent when it's hanging? Where are they going to be? Yeah. Is it because it has to read from a very big buffer? So the question, first question we should ask is, will we get to the reads? You have?
Yeah, so write has to write into a buffer, and if it gets to a point where it can fill up the buffer, then it just waits for more space to be cleared out of that buffer. The only way that space gets cleared is for the other person, the parent, to read, but the read is trying to write, and it needs the child to read.
Yeah, so the problem is that write is going to wait for space in a buffer, and normally we expect that space to be freed up by someone reading. But in this case, when the child tries to write, well, the read that it's waiting for is not going to happen because the parent's busy writing. And when the parent's trying to write, it's going to have the same problem. The read that it's waiting for is not going to happen because the child is trying to write. So both the parent and child are waiting for each other to read before they will read, and no one's going to make any progress. And this is what we'll call a deadlock. So the child, parent is waiting for buffer space to be available from the parent reading, and vice versa. And we call this a circular dependency. And one way we represented this with this sort of graph like this, graph in the sort of vertices and edges sense, that we have the parent process waiting for space to write on the buffer, which is a shared resource. So that's an important thing about these sort of what we call deadlock scenarios. We'll have a formal definition later, that there's a shared resource. And that pipe is going to be freed by the child process, but the child process right now is busy waiting for something else, which is a different shared resource with the parent, namely the other pipe's buffer. So this is an example of deadlock with pipes. But we're in the unit on threads, and this is most notably a problem with thread synchronization. In particular, probably the most frequent way it comes up is with locks. Let's look at an example with locks. So here's a function which can have a deadlock. So here I have this directory data structure where I've decided I'm going to represent directories as a struct with a lock. So I can have two different, so, you know, threads take turns modifying what files are in a directory. You don't get confused about contents of a directory. And my move file operation is going to, you know, erase a file from one directory, add it to another, and we have to acquire the locks for both because we don't want to have two things accessing the same directory at once, and you'll get confused about what's in the directory or corrupt the map, which would be much worse, right? Because remember, maps are like doing memory allocation and freeing things. Don't like to dereference an old pointer. So we can have a deadlock with two calls to move file, which seem independent of each other. We're moving a file called foo from A to B, and a file called var from B to A. If we do this at the same time, we can have the threads be stuck. So let's look at sort of how that happens. First, let's look at sort of, you know, sort of the simple case is that this could just work. That if the first thread goes and moves, and the second thread goes and moves, we have no problem. The problem is that they could happen at the same time. They could also work fine if the first thread goes to move and the second thread goes to move in the middle, right? We'll effectively take turns, right? This is sort of taking turns. But locks, you know, normally they just make us take turns, and that might happen. Here, I try to acquire the lock in B. Thread one already has it. That's not a problem. The issue is that if I get unlucky and try to acquire the lock on B there, I'm going to have something bad happen. And if I just do it a little bit earlier. And so what happens is we thread one locks A, thread two locks B. Why are they locking A and B? Because it's their first arguments. That's what the code does. And then the next thing they do is they try to lock their second arguments. So thread one wants to lock B, which is going to have to wait because it's A, thread two hasn't locked. And thread two wants to lock A, and it's going to have to wait because thread one hasn't locked. And there's nothing in the code which is going to make them change their mind. It's like that scenario with that bridge I started you with. You know, you'd say in real life, well, we just back up, right? But there's no code here to back up. So they're just going to wait there forever. And doing it as that dependency graph, you have thread one is waiting for the lock on directory B, which thread two has, and it's waiting for the lock on directory A, which thread one has. We have the circular dependency. No one can make progress. And I showed you this example with two threads, but what's particularly pernicious about deadlock and these sorts of problems is that they can be more complicated than that. We can have a scenario that involves three threads in three different directories, all of which are necessary to have this hanging situation. Where we'd end up with a scenario, you know, like this. And we could also have it with sort of other sorts of resources. So if, like, imagine our malloc function, instead of returning null when we were out of memory, just waited for enough memory to be free. Well, in that case, something like this, we could have the same sort of deadlock scenario, right? Where I'm waiting for a megabyte of memory to be free, which you're not going to free until you get your megabyte of memory to finish your work. And we'd end up with sort of this infinite waiting scenario, which we might represent like this. So we have all these sorts of scenarios, and the key sort of attribute is we have this sort of circular waiting relationship. That there's some resource that we need to do work that we're waiting on, and we end up having, we're waiting for that resource to be released by someone who's also waiting for something which ends up waiting for us. We have this circular dependency. We end up waiting on ourselves. And unless we do something about it, no one can make progress. And what makes it a very pernicious and annoying thing that we're going to want to be very careful to avoid is that it's very non-deterministic in practice, right? It depends on that exact timing. And it comes up with threads because acquiring multiple locks is probably the most common case where we see deadlock. Even though I've shown you with a bunch of different resources, locks by far are where this problem comes up the most, especially when we have lots of different locks rather than like one lock to protect a lot of stuff. And why we want to have lots of different locks? Well, because that will allow us to do more things at once, right? If we had a lock for all directories, well, we couldn't move files in different directories at the same time. That would be pretty bad. So we have a separate lock for each directory, but then we got into trouble. I'm going to talk about how to avoid it. I know that deadlock is different than starvation. So in starvation, we have one thread which is very disappointed, and some other threads which are fine. In deadlock, no one who's involved in the deadlock scenario makes any progress. So deadlock is, in that sense, worse than starvation. Also, starvation we can resolve by taking turns. That if we just have a way of taking turns with starvation, that will fix the problem. With deadlock, that won't fix the problem. If we think of our, you know, our two cars, telling the yellow car, it's your turn, go, and having the black car do nothing, not going to solve the problem. Once it happens, taking turns is not going to fix it. So I've shown you sort of informally what deadlock is. Let's talk about it a little more formally. So deadlock has these four attributes, which we can make a definition. We need to have mutual exclusion. We need to have some resource that actually can only be used by one thread at a time, like memory, that buffer space in a pipe, a lock, and so on. If we have a resource which can be shared, you like compute time in a round robin system, that's not going to be deadlock. We need to have hold and wait, that we need to actually be holding some resource, reserving it for ourselves, and waiting to acquire another resource. So if we can see that if we don't do this, we can avoid deadlock. We need to have no preemption of resources, that once I have a lock or once I have some memory, you can't just take it from me. If you could, that would fix the deadlock. And I need to have that circular wait. I need to have be waiting on someone who's waiting on someone who's waiting on me. Yes?
Do all four of these conditions need to be present for deadlock to occur?
Question, do all four of these need to be true for deadlock to occur? Yes. So if we break any one of these, we will fix a deadlock. So we can look at any one of these parts of the definition and change them, and we won't have deadlock anymore. We might have some other problem. Like if we decide I'm going to get rid of mutual exclusion by just making locks not wait for anyone, that probably is going to solve our deadlock problem but can create some other problems. Okay. So with deadlock in mind, let's do this little exercise here. So question is, which of these can deadlock here? And probably the most interesting part of the definition to think about is circular wait. Where do we have a circular dependency? Where can we have this circular dependency? Who would like some more time? And one thing you might do is you might try to like look at draw the graph we had earlier. So we have thread one, like say doing remove node of B, and thread two doing remove node of C. You might say, what are they waiting on? What are they waiting for? What are they holding? That could cause a problem. Who would like some more time now? Okay, so let's see who thinks A, B, C, D, E, F, okay, G. Okay, so most people said D, which I think is the best answer. And I think the main confusion is, why isn't B a problem? So to think about why B isn't a problem, if we have a thread removing B and D, well, they have to, both of these have to get the lock on B and D itself, and also on A and E. But those aren't going to be problems for a deadlock because those aren't shared between the two threads, right? That we can just reserve those in advance and it won't make any difference because they're never going to try to acquire locks. The only contended resource is C, and they're going to take turns using C, and while they're using C, no other thread is going to be holding anything the thread else that is wanted, right? So if we give thread one C, then thread two is just going to wait until thread one finishes. It's not going to stop thread one because all the other things it wants, thread one doesn't care about. And if thread two you get C, all the other things thread two has, thread one doesn't care about. So we aren't going to have a deadlock in that case. Okay. So this gets to our deadlock prevention techniques. And as I sort of alluded to earlier, we just target different parts of the definition. So if we don't have mutual exclusion, so we have infinite resources, you know, if everyone has their own directory, no deadlock. if we have no shared resources for some reason, if we have no waiting, so if rather than locking, we have some operation that just gives up when we can't get the lock, rather than waiting, that would do it. In fact, POSIX has something called TriLock, which does that. Is it easy to use? No. But it exists. If we had some way of revoking a lock after you have it, saying, sorry, you have to stop doing that. If we had some safe way of doing that, that would solve it. Can we do that? Well, databases do it, but it requires a lot of extra bookkeeping to make it so things aren't inconsistent. The most common way we're going to do it is by acquiring resources in a consistent order. And this gets rid of the circular wait property. So if we go back to our move file option, we can just say, rather than acquiring the lock on the from and the to directory, we can acquire them in some arbitrary order. And why is this going to prevent our deadlock? Well, because if we think of the scenario we had, we needed to have one thread acquire the from A first and one thread acquire B first. If they both try to acquire A first, then we aren't going to have a circular dependency anymore. We're just going to have both of them waiting on the same thing, and they're going to take turns. So any ordering will do, we just need to be consistent. And this is by far the most common way we deal with deadlocks in the real world. So if you look at the Linux code, for example, they just have comments which say, this is the order we acquire locks in this code to avoid deadlock. So these are like comments from the Linux kernel saying, hey, there are a bunch of these locks, you acquire this lock, then this lock, then this lock, so you avoid deadlock. You always do it in that order. So that's where I'll finish up today. We'll review this next time and start talking about virtual memory.